Good afternoon, and welcome to Radio Estina for Tuesday, August 12th, 2008. This is our 20th show. We began last year, and we're going to begin 4 minutes early today after that 40-minute music set. And this is being taped. I am not taping it myself today. So we don't expect any kind of... garbling or interference. Now let me turn up the volume just a little bit here. See how that goes in terms of our levels. Okay. What we have is, what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about the forum. We're going to talk about a couple of recent news stories and what they show about the state of the world. And then we're going to talk about, we're going to do some E. Michael Jones. We're going to last 2 hours maximum till 3. And what I wanted to do was start, first of all, what I did was turn the, and we have a thread up in VNN Forum. If you want to make any comments about the technical quality or what we're talking about, you can make them at VNNforum.com, which we hope you'll join. We're remaking it to make it higher quality. Better average post. We've limited some of the under-gifted mentally, or the under-controlled. And that's what I'm going to talk about as our first topic, right after I get done talking about language and the importance of using it correctly. And now here I am looking at the June issue of E. Michael Jones's Culture Wars, No Social Progress Outside the Moral Order. As I like to say, no social progress outside the biological order. If your morals include pretending that one species is the same as another and that they all can live together happily on common terms, then you are trying to make social progress outside the biological order, and that doesn't work. So biology trumps morals every time if you're talking civilizational basics. That is, it has a higher common denominator. Now, as the forum has shown, the mere fact that one is of the same race as other people does not guarantee compatibility, progress, or anything. There have to be behavioral controls on top of the biology. But what I was particularly going to remark on was the misspelling of this word judgment. J-U-D-G-M-E-N-T is the correct way to spell it in America, and in England they use an E, but it's very irritating to see that. J-U-D-G-E-M-E-N-T. There's no second E in there. J-U-D-G-M-E-N-T. Judgment. J-U-D-G-M-E-N-T. Judgment. And what I did was change the civil section in the forum to language. That's where things like this can be discussed. I've also talked about comparatives in my particular preference for the ER over the more. In fact, what you've seen in the last 15 to 20 years is the growth of more, almost to the exclusion of the ER. People are very worried about using the ER, even when it's correct. So that when I write stupider, they get very consternated. Is that a word? Is that it? Yes, stupider is the comparative form. Stupidest is the superlative form. Superlative itself is not a superlative. You can't say, oh, that was a superlative chicken dinner you made. It doesn't work like that. Superlative describes the class of adjectives that take that EST or that most. So comparative superlative. It just as gender is misused for sex deliberately and ideologically, superlative's misuse, there's no political meaning behind it. It's simply a misuse by people who don't know any better. We're trying to get the people who do know better at VNN more out of them and more from the ones we already have. And interesting. The June issue has a couple things. What I'm doing now is I track all the paleo conservative stuff, Talkie Mag and Chronicles of Culture, Chronicles Magazine, and also the American Conservative. I track those in the Conservatism Forum under Politics and Philosophy at vnnforum.com. And anything that the principals say, that those would be Tom Fleming and the old goat Clyde Wilson are the principals at Chronicles, and at Talkie Mag the principals are, well, anyone who writes for them, John Zmirak, and some of their other writers touch on white nationalism from time to time, and of course they've got Jew Paul Gottfried handling them, making sure they don't stray off the reservation and they stick to pretending that ethnicity matters more than race, or that culture matters more than race, that all of our problems spring from some, you know, mist coming out of the rocks and can't be attributed to a particular source. It's kind of funny, though. The reason that they're worth messing with is they have some intelligent people who still haven't discovered that the real thing is out there. And I posted it one time, like, you keep talking about the suicide. The West is not committing suicide. The West is being murdered. And the person responded, like, well, that's really kind of a cool, you know, and I didn't further respond, but it wasn't intended to be cool or witty or even memorable. It's intended to be literal. The West is being murdered. I don't mean literally murdered, but it's being led to genocide. People have put the policies in place. As I love to quote FDR, nothing in politics happens by accident. If something happens, you can bet it was intended to happen that way. And yet the conservatives, who in every other sector, every minor area, that's what's so misleading about conservatives. They'll speak the truth about the nickel and dime stuff, but on the dollar stuff, they'll lie because they're afraid of the powers that be. And this they turn into, just as the Jews pretend to, and the Catholics pretend to turn niggers into human by means of their moralizing and their doctrines. Cowardice becomes maturity, and the conservative becomes prudence. It's prudent for him not to mention the Jew that is causing these symptoms, and instead to point to just, you know, general cultural decline coming from God knows where, just maybe because that's the way things are, and we tiny few must hold out against it, and we are the last civilized men, and on in this vein. But it's worth going over there and hassling them, kicking them the way the Jews do, just to show them what they are, remind them of what they are, which is curs and cowards, and remind them that we have something better, and show their readers who might not be aware that we have something better. And that's what we do. That's why we pay attention to them. But they must be fought just the way the Jews must be fought. I've advocated this policy for 10 years. VNN just went through its 8th anniversary on August 9th, 2000. And this forum's been around about, since late 2003. So already more than 5 years. And what I've decided to do is make this my number one priority right now. And I've revamped what we're doing. We're going to upgrade the average quality of the average poster and the average post, get people spelling stuff correctly, and in general, demonstrate. Rather than tell people what we ought to do, we're going to try to demonstrate a little of what we're talking about in terms of having something that's truly superior. There simply isn't enough time. It's not wasting time with these people who don't want to conform to basic behavioral standards. We don't need them. Basic behavioral and intellectual standards are going to be maintained at VNN Forum, and that's why I went through and revamped it somewhat, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that right now. Let's go through what we've got. I'll start out here. Looks like our sound levels are okay. If anybody has a problem, please post. I'm seeing sound in the green. I'm told it's supposed to be the top of the green or the yellow, but I can't seem to get it too much higher than it is. So, let's see. I think it should be about okay. Now, where are we? Okay. What I've done is streamline and simplify what we've done. And what we're doing is aiming at turning VNN Forum into a showcase for our politics and our cause. And our cause, of course, is much bigger than any partisan politics advocated by liberal or conservatives. It involves nothing short of ground that religions normally cover. What I've done is get rid of the moderators. We now have Varg and I running it. I'll be running it day to day. Varg will take care of the technology and technical support. Beyond that, we don't need moderators. Anybody new who signs up and follows the rules, which most people who sign up do not do, they don't choose an appropriate name. We don't allow fantasy or fiction. When they sign up, make a couple of reasonable posts, we immediately put them in as a registered user for those of you who are lurking. So it goes right through. It's pretty quick. All you got to do is follow the rules. And beneath that, what we've done is, what I've done is go through and take the people who have no self-control and group them into a free-range tard corral, as we've styled it. It's free-range because they can post on any subject and pretty much whatever they want as long as they stick to the original rules. And they can run around like kooks and crazies. And as I subtitled it, for paranoids, troublemakers, flamers, and assorted head cases, we can't quite see our way to banning. And there do seem to be too many people in our cause who have behavioral problems, have self-control problems, who are inherently anti-authoritarian. A lot of these people are driven here because the press that we get from the Jews makes it sound like we're congenial to them, but we're not. What we have is better than what the Jews have. It's better than their so-called liberal society, in which most of what goes on has to be covered up because it isn't any good for the majority population. What the majority population want never makes its way into law. We've talked about that before with Glenn Greenwald and Salon. You know, the majority doesn't want our involvement with Israel, doesn't want our involvement in the Middle East. It doesn't want affirmative action. It doesn't want open borders, yet we have all those things. The majority does not get what it wants. And the Jews, what they like to do is their guise is to speak for the community and claim there's no place for hate. And, of course, whatever they don't like is hate. So that's what we're fighting. And we, who really do represent the view of the community, have to weed out nuts, wackos, paranoids, whatever, whether they're legitimately attracted to us or whether they're driven there by the Jews. And that's what I've done here. And you know what? It took about an hour. And we're going to see things improve. Anyone who can't spell, anyone who gets angry at a little bit of sharp criticism, and I'm not withholding now, anyone who overreacts to that criticism, you're gone or you're in the tard corral. We don't need you. You're weak. You're not strong enough to defeat the Jews. We only need people who are intelligent enough and have enough self-control to actually do something about the problems. We're not writing about this for our own amusement. A lot of it's not amusing. It's pretty depressing stuff when you read day in and day out about these black-on-white rapes, these murders, people being jailed or, you know, taken to court, having to go to court to defend their wearing of a Confederate shirt. Goes on all the time. So we need people who can fight back. We're going to make it into a showcase. Our general discussion is going to become a showcase. We are going to have, what we may do is have two. Have one that's for everybody who's out of the tard corral and who's a normal accepted participant. Then we'll have a showcase forum in which we only allow the very best posters to post on specific topics. And in that way, we will showcase what we have the rest of the world, because what we have right now is we have something better than what the conservatives have, and that's where we draw a lot of our people. But what we don't have is as good of a showcase for our ideas. We don't have as much self-control among our members. We do have individuals, and many of them, not a few, many of them, who are more intelligent than the people who write for the conservative sites, the paleoconservative sites, let alone the neoconservative sites, who can make the case, but they're being drowned out or overwhelmed or distracted by the idiots. And the idiots have anti-authoritarian problems in that they won't conform their spelling and the color of their posts. They won't conform to simple rules. They want to post idiotic graphics. Well, that's all coming to an end. And 80% of it has come to an end. And the other 20% is a work in progress. the getting rid of the problem is a lot easier than the building up of the quality, but a lot of what this does is it favors quality over quantity. It allows the better to come through. It encourages better still to come forward. So that's how we're refining things. And like I said, the solution to this is to take the people who have mental or behavioral problems yet still have an upside and put them in the place where they can't bother others. Now, anyone who's on the forum can go into the TARD corral, but the people who are stuck in the TARD corral cannot post anywhere but the TARD corral. Whereas I let even opponents, and we have no way of verifying if someone's a Jew, a homosexual, a black, or other, anyone who gets on there is equal to anyone else. They can post wherever they want. We don't pretend to do background checks. But if they can't control themselves, and they don't know English, and they show no disposition to learn, we don't need them. And you know what? I don't accept, I don't know how to spell, spelling doesn't matter. All of these programs have spell check built in. And a red line appears under what you write. If you can't figure it out from two or three repetitions of spelling the word wrong and being corrected, we don't need you. You're lazy, good for nothing, and you're going to have problems in pretty much anything you do in life. So go away. There are millions of other discussion boards out there. You don't have to come to ours. Leave. And what we've got is, as the rain picks up here in northeastern Missouri, we have got, now here we go. Here's a good example. We have somebody sign up as propaganda leader. So in his little crazy little head, he's the next Joseph Goebbels, and he's coming to what is called by the Jews a Nazi site, even though there is no Nazi symbology on our masthead or our nameplate. We don't say anything about being Nazis. We merely discuss them seriously without accepting what the Jews say about them at face value, and that makes us Nazis. So this idiot thinks he can come here and sign up as propaganda leader. And this kind of fantasy crap, this low level of intelligence, do they read the rules? No, they don't care. They sign up as what they want. We delete the account immediately. That's the beautiful part of it. It's very simple. And that way, 80% of the problems are headed off at the pass. They never get into the forum. Now, my message to any potential signers up is don't even bother. Your account will be deleted. As I'm doing right now. Propaganda letter is deleted. And there are just too many. And, you know, it really isn't a white nationalist thing. It's just a general cultural decline thing. People don't read rules. They don't follow rules. They don't care about rules. They don't understand the need for basic control or basic spelling. So we don't need these people. Now, let's see. I guess the point of my message about the forum is I encourage good people to come forward, and we are going to do everything we can to protect the intelligent posters, and we're going to get rid of the morons. That's it. That's our new policy in a nutshell. And the paranoids can be in the TARD corral, or they can go to hell, be banned, or leave. It's funny that it's the one thing that the paranoids don't do. I'd like to point out, discuss paranoia just a little bit before I get on to the two news articles I want to discuss, and then get on to the Jones that we'll conclude with. But paranoids think everything is about them. Especially if they're narcissistic paranoids. They relate everything to them. And they are stroked. They positively like it when there's something like a TARD corral for them to be thrown into, because it makes them believe that they're right in thinking everything is about them, that they are all important, and what they say is the be-all and the end-all. In this way, they're very much like niggers who, as 90% of them do, believe all whites are racist. So when they, in the rare instances they encounter open white racism, they're actually stroked by it. They like it. It makes them feel good because it's what they believe inside. So paranoids cause the thing they ostensibly fear but which they actually like, drawing all attention to themselves and proving that they're right, that people really are out to get them. They delight in that. Well, this kind of defect can go along with great talent as well. They're not at all necessarily opposed, but the problem they present is that they can't control or contain their attacks on other people, and it gets to a really ludicrous level to where someone like Mel Kerr is claiming that we never landed on the moon, and thereby throwing into disregard or disrespect genuine revisionist cases for which men are actually in prison. No one throws you in prison for saying we didn't land on the moon, A, because it's stupid, B, because no one has any incentive to lie about it. But they do throw men in prison. There are a lot of men in prison for talking about the so-called Holocaust because there is a reason to lie there. It has been lied about. And the flow of a lot of money depends on it. So, all things to be considered. But we're weeding anybody who exhibits paranoiac tendencies is going to be dealt with, just as idiots are going to be dealt with, just as people who have no interest in spelling correctly are going to be dealt with. And indeed, they already have mostly been dealt with. There are a few left. And if that means the number of posts drops, big deal. Millions and millions of posts is not the gauge of the quality of a forum. Neither is Alexa ratings the measure of the quality of a website, nor of its influence. Simple things that we said even when we had VNN at 10,000 in Alexa, when we had Wolzik and I doing it daily, and everything was at its peak in one sense. Since then, we've done a lot of different things. There's been a lot of growth. And although our numbers have fallen back in Alexa, our influence has been huge. It is now broadly understood across the internet that people who do not name the Jew and who do not talk about Jews on their agenda, everybody understands they do that out of cowardice and self-interest. And all the paleoconservatives are reacting to us the way they do to the Jews. They're backpedaling. They're shitting out all the same jibes about how we're low quality and we're this and we're that. Well, some of the people calling themselves white nationalists are, but it's funny. They make no allowances. The paleoconservatives make less allowances for white nationalists than they do for niggers or Jews. You know, we're supposed to be... plenty of our people have problems, but plenty of the conservatives have problems. And none of their leaders are speaking the truth about anything related to race. And they accuse everybody else of misrepresenting them, even when those people who... Even when we combat them, we cite them. We say, here's this guy. Here's what he said. Here's why he's wrong. They don't dare do that. All they do is mischaracterize them and then turn around and blame others for mischaracterizing them. But the others quote them. They never quote anybody. You think someone like Tom Fleming dares to take Revelo Oliver and quote him and say why he's wrong about the Jews? Hell no, he doesn't dare do that. Because he knows that Oliver's right. It's his own cowardice that prevents him from saying the same things that Oliver said. I mean, he even backhandedly tells you this. Oh, yeah, Oliver's a brilliant scholar, a great classical scholar. But, he's one of those crazies. Well, you know what? Oliver's work is of a piece. It's seamless. What he says about one thing, he says in the same tone, the same words, the same respect for facts about Jews as he does about everything else. The problem lies in the Flemings and the Wilsons. These are the cowards. The Zmiraks. These are the cowards. These who are the ones who accept a lower standard of evidence when it comes to the Nazis. And I was thinking about this today. I was thinking, you know, what's another reason these Catholics hate Nazism so much? And it occurred to me that maybe part of the reason they hate him is, you know, they place their... Jones's tagline shows it, you know, no social progress outside the moral order. Their whole thing is morals, the moral order, acting morally. And Jones has just written a 1,000-page book on how Jews are the main subverters of that moral order. And then you look, who are the main people who actually fought Jews over time? And the Nazis did more in 12 years than the Jews did in 2,000 years. Because the Catholics falsely say that all you need to do is convert. Even though they've had all kinds of Jews convert, whatever, they still go back to their same ways the minute there's an opening. So conversion doesn't do anything. And what the Nazis did was actually carry out a large-scale war that darn near got rid of Jewish influence throughout Europe. And I think that's what the Catholics truly hate. The Nazis actually fought evil and damn near ended it in the form it takes in the Jew. And not only that, they carried out the war against the Jew more morally than pretty much any army ever heard of. You would be far more afraid to fall under the into the care of a Catholic army than you would of a Nazi army. And you read, you know, okay, you may think that's ridiculous, you who haven't read the accounts of real people. But if you read about, you read people who had actual experiences with the Nazis, they were treated far more fairly than, oh, hell, any European religious war of the Middle Ages. I mean, they ripped people up. They were all kinds of insane, crazy people, things that they did. Ripping people's ear off and torturing them up, far worse than what the Nazis did. The Nazis weren't out there raping, murdering, and torturing people. That's what the Americans did. You know, they let the niggers rape, you know, Italian women. They let them rape German women. That's what the Russians did. So the armies that were under Jewish control were the ones out raping and terrorizing people. So I think the Nazis, and you know, no army is wholly moral, and there's always going to be some problems, but I would think that the Nazis fought at a higher level, not just technically, where it was estimated they were 50% better than any than the next nearest competing army. They were 50% better fighters per man, but they were more moral than pretty much any army ever heard of. Now, that will surprise you, but that's because that's not what is put in the papers and in the history books. Yet it's true. I mean, even Takimag's founder, the poor little Greek boy who's the son of a shipping magnate, had his, I believe his familial estate was occupied by Nazi officers during World War II when he was a child, said that, you know, they treated them very well. They treated them very formally and correctly. So the reality is not what the Jews portray in the history books. Now let us see. All right, the first article I want to talk about today is one that Stan Sikorsky dug up. And just a sign of the times. And this is what happens when you pretend that there is progress outside of the biological order. Flight of the dead, suburban families move loved ones from Detroit cemeteries. And this is about basically these Italian whites, to be redundant, moving their interred relatives from cemeteries inside the black hole that is Detroit out to the suburbs where they move now, partly out of fear of the surroundings of those cemeteries and partly just out of respect for their dead and wanting their dead to feel safe too. So even dead people are leaving Detroit. And what's left is these monkeys like Kwame Kilpatrick, the mayor, who was thrown in jail recently for breaking the terms of his, his bond or his, I forget if it was bond or probation, and he's the mayor of the city. So this, you know, they start this feature by writing about a couple that was buried 50 years ago in Detroit's Mount Olivet Cemetery on the city's east side. Their grandchildren decided to disinter them, move them to the leafier suburbs, and bury them again this particular morning. He'd complain, "Why did you spend the money?" said Francesco's granddaughter, Gary Sipe. "My grandmother, she'd just cry." By now, the statistics are as well known in London as they are in Livonia. Livonia is like famous as one of the whitest areas. And it happens to be pretty near Detroit, but it was like 98% white a couple of years ago. Of course, whites have long since fled Detroit, left it to the niggers. The statistics are as well known in London as they are in Livonia. Detroit has lost half its population since its heyday of the 1950s. Every year, the city hemorrhages an estimated 5,000 more people. First, it was white flight to the suburbs. Then, with the city's continued spiral into poverty and violence, blacks began to flee those same suburbs. And while census figures show that whites are returning to some of the nation's largest cities, Detroit is experiencing a flight of a different kind. As the Imbrunone's second funeral demonstrates, Detroit is experiencing the flight of the dead. The movement of the dead from the nation's largest black city to its overwhelmingly white suburbs is small, though socially symbolic phenomenon, revealing the grinding problems of race, crime, and economics that plague both sides of 8 Mile. From 2002 through 2007, the remains of about 1,000 people have been disinterred and moved out of the city, according to the permits stored in the city's Department of Health. Look at it another way. For every 30 living human beings who leave Detroit, one dead human being follows. This is absolutely pathetic. This is how uncivilized it's become when it's, and like they said, this is the niggeriest city in probably all of North America. Probably South America too. In all of the Americas, Detroit is the blackest city, and it's also one of the most messed up. Literally going back to nature, you've seen the site, the ruins of Detroit. If you haven't, Google that up and look at the images of the old, beautiful old buildings in which they built the cars and they housed the workers and they had the after parts places and just the whole barrier reef that is the automotive technology. All gone now, and these magnificent buildings are all now destroyed or squatted in. And what's left is, you know, niggers and maybe a Popeye's chicken place and a hair parlor and a nigger dentist. I mean, there's just nothing there. It's Africa, essentially. And that's what we mean when we twist Jones's slogan and say no social progress outside the biological order. You can't make any kind of civilization until you take factual reality into account. The facts are that blacks are not dark whites, just as Jews are not unconverted Christians, and no amount of moralizing or holy water will change those facts. It's pure alchemy that the church is attempting, and they are willing to blind their eyes to the cost of their position. They don't care. As long as the person's baptized, they don't care. It says in the Jones we'll talk about today, you know, the mob would be pursuing these Jews. And if they agreed to convert, the minute, you know, they were converted, the mob ignored them. They didn't care any longer. The thing didn't suddenly become a human because it converted and a priest said some words to it. That doesn't change its nature. Only a religious type can believe that. And that's why religious types end up, oh, you know, the tiger shark won't eat me. I'll hop in the water. Don't worry about it. That's why they get killed by natives, you know, those women over in Kenya getting raped and murdered, as we've seen other places. Oh, you know, they're saving the niggers. First thing they do after they've been attacked, if they survive, go pray for them and tell the niggers they forgive them. Well, the nigger never said he was sorry. They're operating off false premises and believe that they're holy for doing so. And the ones who are aggressive are sanctimonious madmen, and the ones who are wimpy are, you know, kumbaya liberals. But they all end up conducing to the same end, which is the destruction of a civilized country worth living in. And that country worth living in begins with a white racial basis. Even if whites don't get along, whatever, it usually, you know, it's still pretty quiet, pretty sane. If they hate each other, they're usually quiet. They stick to themselves. They avoid each other. They don't go out and do drive-bys. Well, let's see what they say about the Imbrunoni. I'm assuming that's the way to pronounce it. Such is the case with the Imbrunoni clan, whose patriarch Francesco came from Sicily to America in the hull of a ship in 1902 and made his new life in Detroit. He was an anonymous man, a laborer who lived in boarding houses and swept factory floors. He would return to Italy occasionally until his wife Francesca demanded that he bring her and their children to the U.S. in 1937. Three generations of the Imbrunonis made a home on the east side of Detroit near Harper and Gradiot, or Gradio, where the trolley cars turned around a place the Italians called Cacalupo, Caccalupo. It was nine people in a first floor flat. Francesco was a simple man who drank only wine and is said to have washed his face with his mouth closed so that no water would touch his palate. His wife Francesca never learned English, but taught her granddaughters Italian. They attended mass together, and the family sold vegetables at the Eastern Market, saved its money, and bought property in 1960 in St. Clair Shores. Francesco died a few months before the family left the city. He died happy, by all accounts. He went to nap with a belly full of pasta and never awoke. And this is the type of person who built America. I mean, you know, artisans or laborers, and they may have come from Italy, but they built their family, and they literally built the city. We had, back in the day, we had a guy who used to write about these beautiful buildings that these people built, the ordinary Europeans, and now that they're gone and they're replaced by welfare-taking blacks who don't do anything, the city has gone to ruins. And the meta-problem, that's the direct problem. Pretty obvious to perceive. Pretty obvious what the solution is. The meta-problem is we can't write about it honestly, except on the internet, read by a few people. Because the power centers in our society have been taken over by people in whose interest it is to lie about all this. So, no, that black can be just as good as Francesco in Brunoni. That black's willing to live in 9 to a flat and work hard every day for 50, 60 years and raise a family. Blacks will do that just like whites. Sir, all recorded history says they won't. Shut up. You're a racist. You're a hater. You're evil. Well, now you know what? The grandkids have to move that guy out of that city because the blacks have destroyed it. The blacks, led on, aided and abetted, and covered up for by the Jews, have destroyed Detroit just as they are destroying America, just as they destroy everywhere they are given the opportunity to roam free. There's no greater lesson you can take from this radio show. Radio Istina, Istina versus Pravda. The Pravda is the lie that blacks are just as good as whites. In Russian, it means the ideological truth, the way things should be. Istina is the real truth, the way things are. This story from Detroit shows you the way things are. Italians and Americans and other white men from Europe, whites, built Detroit. They made it the Paris of the Americas. Blacks made it, what, the Soweto of Americas. Blacks made it the Africa of the Americas. Well, I mean, you could argue with them. East St. Louis and Katrina, New Orleans are just as bad, but anywhere blacks go will become like this over time. And money is taken from you whites listening to this to subsidize these animals, to make it worse, to expand, because black populations always expand. I saw a good quote. Somebody had it, VNNforum.com, from, I think, Alfred Rosenberg, saying, you know, there are 12 million blacks today in America, and at some point they're going to reach 50 million, and they might be able to just strike the decisive blow. Guess what? There's already 40 million blacks in America. 40 million. On the verge of electing a black president. I don't personally think it's as likely as a lot of white nationalists do, or even conservatives. I think it's far from a sure thing that Barack Obama will be elected. In fact, I think it's likelier that McCain will be elected. That's as far as I'll go. The point is, he has a very good chance of being elected. What is he? He's a Marxist mulatto. Every policy Obama supports would lead to more and more Detroits, larger and larger Detroits. As long as whites accept blame and guilt, and accept money being taken from them, accept that they're the bad guys, the true bad guys are going to continue to grow in power and wealth. They're going to lord it over us, and future generations aren't even going to have anywhere to move their dead ancestors to that are still safe. Being submerged in fondue, a shit fondue, is what is going on. Here's what. The granddaughters, being the next of kin, elected to pay the approximately $5,000 to move their grandparents to Macomb County because they wanted to be closer to them. In our family, you don't forget about your people, Palazzolo said. I hope that's human. It's at least Italian. Love, that was one part of the decision. There is another. To tell you the truth, yes, it's fear, Palazzolo said. Have you been to Detroit? I pray the car doesn't break down. I cringe when I drive down to Gradio. Gradiat. Pardon me for not knowing how that's pronounced. I'm worried for my life. There's a lot of bad people in Detroit. I say that. Gravois. What is it? Gravois in St. Louis. I always thought it was Gravois because it's French. French-Canadian. Or French that who founded St. Louis. And there's a lot of Crèvecoeur and there's a lot of places that have a French name, but they're not always pronounced in the French way. So I don't know if it's Gradiat or Gradio. But anyway, this Italian Palazzolo, who's an American, Italian-American, says, I'm worried for my life. There's a lot of bad people in Detroit. But to tell you the truth, there's a lot of bad people out here. But at least we're closer this way. Earlier this summer, Peter Cracciolo, 89, of Grosse Pointe Shores, removed his mother and sister from Mount Olivet and relocated them to Resurrection. Cracciolo, too, grew up in the city's east side, and his family was part of the Great White Exodus. He says his explanation for moving his dearly departed was convenience, though the Detroit cemetery is closer to his home. So he's covering up his real motive. I've already got relatives up there, he said of the suburban cemetery. I've got friends up there. It's a one-stop visiting this way. Me, I don't forget my people. No, sir. The children of Jack W. Noble Sr. moved their father in May to the Great Lakes National Cemetery in Holly from Gethsemane Cemetery in Detroit, citing the poor condition and upkeep of the cemetery, according to a permit filed with the city. Well, blacks don't have any respect for themselves, let alone their relatives. They don't have any respect for their houses, let alone their graveyard. They don't have any respect for the living, let alone the dead. And you remember, oh, there's been more than one story about, like, black undertakers, and they're just piling up bodies and storing them this way and that and being completely messed up. If you have niggers, you're going to have nigger standards. It's like white people have taken on this mission of, we got to civilize the nigger. We have to turn the nigger into human. Like, it hasn't worked, guys. Give it up. Nothing you can do will turn them into human beings. And you're hating this subset of whites who tell you that flat truth is only making things worse for you and for everybody. We got to get rid of this white liberal cult. And guilt is not the bottom of this. Most of these people do not feel guilty, or if you want to say that guilt drives this, guilt is no more than the second or third driver of this stuff. Hatred for other whites is higher than any guilt these people feel for blacks. A lot of it is just love of, what drives a mad scientist. We're carrying out experiments. We have to figure out how to reduce poverty. That's the problem. The problem here is poverty. It's not black. They don't have enough money. I know there are some people say, well, we've taken over $1 trillion from the whites and given these niggers, you know, but sometimes these things take a little time. The black man has been hobbled in the Americas for 400 years. He was a slave and he was a... You lying shitheads. By every indices, blacks were best off when they were slaves and when they were released and subject to Jim Crow. They were forced to act like humans because the threat of the whip hung over them. The threat of being lynched. That's the only thing that can make a nigger approximate a human's behavior. And even then, it's very touch and go. Because niggers can't remember anything for more than 3 or 4 seconds. They can't keep two things in their head at once. That's why if you ever watch a football game, you see a nigger try to down a punt while staying out of the end zone. They can't do it. Not just because it is hard to do. But a nigger cannot keep two things in his head at once, like stay out of the end zone and down the ball. He can do one of those things, but he can't do two. Or you see a basketball game, you see a nigger commit a foul after the coach has been screaming. It leaves their head. You can scream at them all you want, and 3 seconds later it's gone, and it's replaced by some other impression to the limited extent to which a nigger brain accepts impressions. They can't be taught, they can't be turned into human by any kind of word magic, by any kind of water magical potion. And that's what this Catholicism and religious stuff is. Oh, moral, you just got to teach them the right way. If we move one nigger, and I've said this before, I'll say it again, I read it in the Rudolf Ahler's book, talking about character reformation through self-inspection. And, you know, if we, I can't remember what it was in relation to, but he said basically if we find one person in 1,000 that is able to change its behavior because of this teaching, then we can't regard the other 999 as lost. So one outweighs 1,000 by the Catholic way of thinking. The weight of the evidence of the 999 who failed weighs less than the one that was brought around, however temporary and small the gains in that case actually were, assuming recidivism. And now, racialists grant, hey, you know, 10% of niggers can approximate human behavior, or at least human intelligence. We call them the talented tenth, but the 90% cannot. Now, you show me how it shows any respect for God whatsoever to claim that we are supposed to ignore those facts and pretend that races can mix and cover up the results of that insane policy. I say it shows no respect for God whatsoever. God created a situation, whether you're Catholic or un-Catholic, in which 99% of the species that ever existed are extinct. You want to be real? Okay, you want to be religious? Say, God wipes out all the species. He wants species to wipe each other out. He created a world. Maybe he created the process of evolution in which one species drives out another. Someone made a great point at VNN. They didn't even used to call them races. They called them species. Races doesn't even show you how much difference there is between them. They're different species. Why should we let their species dominate ours? Why should we let a third species, the Jew, use them to destroy our species? Isn't our art better, our athletes better, our women better, our brains better, our general temperament better than anything the Jews and blacks have to offer? Then why won't we defend it? Why are we embarrassed to defend it? Why do we run from it? It's time to get aggressive against the Jew. You know what works against the Jew? Not talking and arguing. What works against the Jew is mobs chasing down the Jew and killing them. That's what needs to be done to liberate America and save the West. I don't want to have to sit here and read stories about some poor old Italian folks having to move their grandparents because when they go to lay some flowers on the grave, they're in danger of getting jumped by a bunch of goddamn niggers. I don't want to live in that country. I'm sick of it. You know what? If I was a researcher, maybe one of you can do this. I want you to find out what was the background of the niggers who went back to Liberia. Were they not raised as Christians and Republican Democrats? Bet they were. Well, why didn't it take over there in Liberia? Why did they fail just as badly as their untutored, unlectured to brothers? Their immoral, cannibalizing brothers. Why are they just as bad within 5 seconds of getting there? Because you know what? Biology is a hell of a lot deeper than words and beliefs. Those are things that flip through people's minds. But what you are is more important than what you think or you say. Don't let the magicians fool you. Men do not come back from the dead. Yet that is the lie the church is based on. And then you wonder why they balk. Oh, well, of course niggers can be human beings. If you can accept that men come back from the dead, you can accept anything. Is reality a joke? Did God create the world as a damn joke? All I've ever observed in life is that every phenomenon has a cause and an explanation. It makes sense to me. People always say, well, that's proof of God. I don't see it that way. But whether I see it that way or not, to me it makes sense that just the nature of things is they have to fall into some kind of pattern. Because otherwise they would be incoherent and they'd be flying about and it wouldn't work and there wouldn't be anything. So it's natural. There's some kind of pattern there. Okay, God created that pattern. Well, then use the brains and the mind and the logic and the evidence that you have to come to the correct conclusion. And I always like what Pierce said, do right and fear no man. If you come to this conclusion that this is what Jews are and this is what they're doing to us, don't be afraid to speak it. It's funny, I post that over the conservative forum. I post that on I say, you know, a guy writes a long post about conservatism today, and he talks up about the different publishing arms and how the Jew houses in New York, seeing the success of the O'Reillys and Limbaughs and Coulters and Hannitys, they all started conservative imprints. There are about 6 major houses, book publishing houses in New York, and I believe each of them has a conservative imprint now. You know, kind of a simultaneous to the rise of the neocons. As the Jews took over the American right and redefined it, you know, conservatism became less of a curse word and more popular and more common. And so the houses all started conservative imprints and rushed out a bunch of neocon books. I guess that's somewhat declining now, but you know, I wrote it in a post which was quickly erased. I said, you know, the problem with conservatism, if you could discuss honestly the problems that conservatism has, it wouldn't have any problems. And that's another way of saying it has a meta problem, which is that the meta problem is you can't speak about the real problems. You can't solve a problem unless you can discuss it and determine what's causing it and spread the news about what's causing it. I mean, imagine, as ridiculous as this is, imagine that fires were burning down everything, and yet, you know, a handful of people figured out if you put water in the fire, you can put it out. And they were prevented from spreading that knowledge, and they were called haters. Anti-firist, or, you know, anti-flamist or something. I mean, it's that's maybe bad. I haven't thought that out. It just occurred to me. But it's much on the level of the same thing. It's like, we figured out these niggers are not human. They don't act like humans. All the standards that we say are civilized standards are actually white standards. And this is what most of these middle-class scolds who get off on Nancy Grace and they get off on Bill O'Reilly and they get off on the COPTCHAs, what they don't grasp is the standards they think these niggers ought to be able to meet, and they blame, even go so far as to blame these niggers for not meeting, are not generic universal standards. One size does not fit all. Different races cannot meet the same standards. That's why they separate. When the standards are far enough apart, you have to segregate the races, and that's the only way that they can live around each other, because they have different ways of looking at things, because they're not the same animal. Don't blame me. I didn't create them. God created them. I have enough respect for what God created to look at it and see it for what it is. It's the Christians who do not. No progress outside the biological order. Catholics need to ponder that. So, the Detroit story is one example of what happens in a diverse society in which we pretend that races are equal. We end up having to relocate our dead grandparents from cemeteries surrounded by saltating simians. Another example is this story from England, and it's about these women who are living in the past. They're alive today, but they make a deep choice to live as though they were 50s housewives or 40s or 30s housewives. And I included one picture of the 50s woman. She's the best looking one, but there's two others, and it's just, some of the quotes in here are fascinating. What they basically show, and the reason this article is worth talking about, is that, and I was talking to someone about this last night, this is not a fetish or a light sort of a choice. They're not doing this for some kind of sexual gratification or because they're weird. They're doing this because the world outside their door frankly sickens them. And this is the best way they can think of to respond, is literally trying to live as though they were in the 50s. And I see this stuff, some of the stuff my grandmother used to have. I remember seeing it in the 70s when we would come down here from Wisconsin or out here from California and visit them, you know, I'm not into material things or I can't remember the names of the different stuff, but just there's a look and a feel that you associate with certain kinds of decades and certain clocks and countertops and stoves and appliances, or like, you know, not a teacup, but like a kettle. Many of you would know this stuff much better than I do, but you can see from the pictures these kinds of things, and they're the stuff you would find in your own grandparents' closets if they're still alive. And there are just some quotes in this article that are very telling and very sad. And these people are essentially whites who want to live white, and they might not even identify it that way. But that's what it is. They've been forced to. Antarctica Kunst, the degraded art, has been made into a Antarctica Gemeinschaft, and a degraded community. Remember, Hitler circulated the German art in the Antarctica Kunst exhibit and showed the German people, look at this. This is the sickness of these Jewish communists. And someone posted a wonderful Nazi political poster showing, you know, an Aryan with a disgusted look on his face pitchforking a filthy Marxist kike onto a shit pile. And by God, that's what we need to do. When I think of how manly the Nazis were in comparison to American Democratic politicians who start crying if they're accused of saying anything that's perceived as racist versus the Nazis who are willing to kill and die and struggle and fight for their beliefs, it's absolutely pathetic how far we've fallen. We're all totally afraid of Jews. We won't say boo to a Jew. We just cringe and back off and let these simians and these kikes riding them take over our society. Absolutely pathetic. The thing to do is to kill them off. And people always say, oh, you're encouraging violence. Anyone who talks about violence is a joke. No. Violence is the only permanent solution to the problem posed by Jews. And you know what? Right now they're over there in Georgia in Ossetia. Duke has some good stuff, David Duke, and other people. There's another good one published on Rents about this in Georgia. And you know William Pierce would write about it if he was alive. Well, guess who has all kinds of trainers over there in Georgia? What the Jews are trying to do is use NATO to encircle Russia and pull off all these different revolutions. I think the one they had in Georgia was the Rose Revolution rather than the Red or the Kike Revolution, as someone put it. It sounds a lot better to say it's a Rose Revolution. Ossetia, I guess, is hugely pro-Russian. And so there's various
fight. There's a good deal of fighting going on. I think John DeNugent may talk about this in his radio show. He made a very good post in his thread at vnnforum.com, and he maintains his thread across a number of different forums, and he posts very high quality material, and it's full of fresh departures for thought and pictures and evidence all tied together nicely. And I think he's also running for office, so someone worth supporting. I like to make mention of anyone who's good and helps us in what we do here at VNN. Like I say, and the Catholics can fire back at us, and they can use my cleanup campaign as proof of what they say. There's no progress outside the moral order, Linder. Look, you got a bunch of losers and spastics or peripheral men, as Fleming likes to say. These people are illiterate. They got no self-control. Well, who are you to be lecturing us? We have intelligent people. You know, we don't go nuts. We don't allow people to post crap all over our forums. We respond, well, there's a degree of truth to that. And that's one reason we are cleaning up some of this. Still have free speech. A lot of people don't understand. I dare say most people don't understand what free speech is. But look, white skin alone is not enough. You have to have a behavioral standard too, at least at VNN Forum, and certainly for any civilization that we're going to build. The contention is that when you have the white civilization, you have the white racial basis, the percent of homos and criminals and mental freaks called liberal cultists is going to be maybe 1 or 2% at most. Easy to identify and weed out, because there won't be any Jews there to lead and inspire and help them subvert. And there won't be any niggers there for their liberal insanity to fasten upon. And it will be much easier to keep that strain of ourselves that is negative from dominating. How do you solve Rosa Luxemburg, a Polish kikus who's trying to foment revolution in Germany? You bash her in the head with your gun butt a couple of times, you take the cunt, and you go throw her in the canal. And you've answered every argument that Rosa Luxemburg has. As God knows, she and her kind don't allow any counter-argument. We talked a lot about what Luke Lawless's sanctimonious madman Elijah P. Lovejoy. The people now giving free speech awards in his name have speech codes up. As our own MB4 said, you know, free speech is an expedient for the Judeo-commies. When they take power, it's out the window. They don't allow us to speak. They shut us down. We have a whole forum. And this is part of the value of VNN Forum to the newcomers. Hey, you know, all you've ever seen about hate speech law in Canada and the rest of the world is a column by Mark Stein, a Jew, trying to hide the fact that he's a Jew. In that way, he himself is living in an earlier decade, because today Jews are bragging about being Jews. Come over to our forum and look at our speech martyr section and find men all around the world, all across the White West, nations dominated by Jews, where men are in jail for breaking these laws. Who passed these laws? The ADL wrote them up, and the owned legislatures passed them. Of course, Jews aren't subject to these own laws, and in the very rare instances they are, they get off, and they're the only ones who get off. And then they go right back to mocking the usual suspects, normal white males. The butt bearing the burden, as I've written many a time. That's all that white males are. They're to be used to produce blonde daughters that can be distributed among niggers and Jews. Beyond that, they're to earn a paycheck. 50% is taken directly by the Jew, and the rest is turned over to their wife and their kids. And they can go watch sports in the 2 days they have off a week. And that's their role in society. They have no say. The feminists will run the courts. The Jews will run the papers. The Jews and fags will run the TV. And they'll own the government. If you're unhappy with that, there's only one way out, and that's through the Jews. And the way to do that is to identify as white, build up networks in your local area, and fight. And get rid of these. Like we said, you got to clear these people off. And the way to do it is to exterminate the enemy. Not to argue with them, reason with them. They don't have any of that. They don't operate that way. Interfaith dialogue, as even the Catholics are finally starting to realize, is just a way for the Jew to undermine their faith. There's no dialogue with the Jews. There's just death for them. That's all they have to offer us. All they can ever do, because of their nature, is subvert society. The Catholics who claim, oh no, baptism cures Judaism. No, it doesn't. You can pour water on a Chihuahua all day long, E. Michael Jones, and it will never turn into a German Shepherd.
Well, humans aren't all bullshitty, Mike. They sure as hell are animals, buddy. No. Humans are between angels, you know, just this utter garbage these people have dreamed up. It doesn't respond to any reality. And it has no feedback loop. It's just like a liberal. It's cut out the feedback loop. This allows its insanity to persist unchallenged. And when they find, in the liberals' case, poor white trash, as they call anyone who's a race realist, or in the Jews' case, the Catholics' case, a Nazi, anybody who is a race realist toward Jews, that's when you see the hatred come out. Because it shows them up. It shows them up for what they are. Not only are they not as moral as the Nazis in war, they aren't as effective as the Nazis in war. Because the Nazis, Adolf Hitler went from nothing, from being a philo-Semite, who had the usual, oh, Jews are all right, they just have a different religion, we shouldn't hate them before that, that's bad, that's evil. Hitler went from that position to taking over a country and very nearly ending the Jews all time as a threat to the rest of the world within 20 years. The Catholics for 2,000 years have been stumbling around. They can barely grab their... They can't find their ass with, you know, two hands and a flashlight. Look what Hitler did in 20... No wonder they hate Hitler. I mean, if the Jews aren't the main problem, then why does Jones write a 1,200-page book about them? Well, he does it because they are the problem. Well, Jones, if Jews are the problem, who's come closer to solving the Jews than anybody else on Earth? Not Jesus. He didn't do a damn thing. Not the Catholics who didn't pay any attention. They had to be awakened to the fact of Jewish subversion through the Talmud in the 1200s when the Talmud was congealed around 500. 700 years, you know, something's, you know, I don't know, they're attacking our people. Where's it coming from? I don't know. You know, never paid attention to the Talmud. Have to be awakened to it by a Jew who converted. I mean, utterly insane. And they still don't go ahead and change their policy. It was the people who had always had the more sense. The people always have more sense on religion and on the race than do the leaders. The leaders always have some explanation or excuse. That's just because people are more intelligent doesn't mean they have a better character. It just means they're cleverer about being bad, hence more dangerous. You know what I'm talking about. The people, the mob, it reacted instinctively the right way. They pursued Jews, they tracked them down, and they killed them. Some of them were dumb enough to let them convert and then let them go on their way. But basically, they pursued them and they killed them. Because they knew the Jews were rats and nothing was going to change them. That's the correct way to operate on them. Even the Nazis didn't truly figure that out, though, I might say. I'm just saying they got a lot farther than the Catholic Church did. The Nazis got so far as to actually drive them out through their policies. They did not put them in concentration camps and kill them. That is a Jewish lie. They should have done that, but they didn't do it. That's why, and another thing here, if anyone is listening from the forum, I really dislike anybody who makes gas chamber jokes because it reinforces the Jewish position and makes us look like idiots. A, the Nazis did not gas Jews. And so to make jokes about it, Jews say, look, they're making fun. No. That sort of thing should be avoided. And I will see that it is avoided at VNNforum.com. Anyway, getting back to the article. Boy, that little... Is it discursus or excursus? Picture of, you know, Joan Massey, living like this makes me happier. And these are people who... Aside from any kind of ideology, at least so far as we know, and of course, you know, the Jews are going to filter it out of their media, if there was an ideological impulse behind this rather than a personal choice crusade they presented as, but one must always try to read between the lines, although there's nothing of that here. Let's just read a little of the article. Time warp wives, meet the women who really do live in the past. As I said, these are women who are living in Britain, these couples. They don't seem to interview the men, but just the women. The credit crunch, a knife crime epidemic. Again, the British paper, guns are outlawed in Britain, and knives are heavily regulated. No, I'm not joking when I say that. I've posted on non-white nationalist forums, and if you bring stuff like that up, people think you're joking when you talk about knife regulation. But no, it's not a joke.
No wonder so many of us are sick of the 21st century. Most of us just grumble that some women have taken radical action to escape what they see as the soulless grind of modern life. Meet the Time Warp wives who believe that life, especially marriage, was far more straightforward in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And that's a large part of the appeal here, is the defined sex roles. The man is the protector and provider, and they are the wife. And they make food, and actually these are not making babies, but they make food, and they're women. She says, Joan Massey, 35, lives in a recreation of a 1950s home in Stafford with her husband Kevin, 42, who works as a graphics application designer. Joanne is a housewife. She says, I love nothing better than fastening my penny around my waist, penny would be an apron, and baking a cake for Kevin in my 1950s kitchen. I put on some lovely Frank Sinatra music and I'm completely lost in my own little fantasy world. In our marriage, I'm very much a lady, and Kevin is the breadwinner and my protector. Okay. And she's a handsome, attractive woman. Redhead. Looking very Betty Crocker. She says, living like this makes me happier. We've been married for 13 years, and we are extremely happy because we both know our roles. Again, this is something humans like teenagers or like gerbils. They like to have a cage, and like a snake likes a box. They like to know where things are and have limits and feel the borders and the barriers, and that's a sign of love and security. People don't like the unknown. One reason Jews are very successful is they're very abrasive and abrupt, and they get in your face, and they don't respond to social cues like whites do. I'm not even sure they perceive them in the same way that I don't think niggers really perceive how obnoxious they are. Now, sometimes they do, and they willfully are obnoxious. But a lot of times, a nigger being a nigger, like, you know, a she-ape going outside going, John, what's your John? I can't even get these laryngeal ejaculations that come out of these 300-pound, eggplant-colored, hippopotamus-sized black women. I mean, but it is somewhat similar. Yeah. If you've ever been around that, and I'm recalling that from a brief period about 6 months when I lived in a half black, half white area, it's just, you don't have to hear more than 2-3 words to realize these animals are not like whites at all. They're a totally different creature, totally different species. And I'm not even convinced they perceive how obnoxious they are to others, because they just don't have that level of... I mean, they can read it on your face sometimes. You can see them responding to white people, and they recognize that whites are, like, afraid of them. Like, you'll often read articles in which black males are talking about how white women grip their purses when they're around. They're aware of that, but on the other hand, they're comfortable with the way they live, and they don't want to live like whites. They see it as an imposition. And, of course, they're too dumb to make the connection between the way we live and the fruits of that, you know, the civilization we built that they're free riders on. So, really, they are only capable of destroying civilization, not understanding or sustaining it. And we have to, like I always try to sum something up in an apothegm or in an epigram or an adage or something that's memorable. And the way to look at this, the liberal view is, oh, we can turn the niggers into humans by giving them money. They wouldn't put it that baldly, but that's what lies. We can turn the nigger into human by giving them money. That's the liberal socialist position, and it's an evolution from the Christian position, which is we can turn the nigger into a human by telling it about Jesus and giving it the commandments. Now, both these simultaneously coexist, right? Both these positions are still out there doing damage. The nigger, you know, the government is taking your tax money, and then the Christian Children's Appeal is telling you to give what isn't taxed to them to sponsor the next round of these simians. The same position, put into the best possible form by me, because that's what I do, is the only thing the white man can do for the black man is protect himself from it. Right? Read through all Catholicism and all liberalism, all socialism, and you won't find anything
I don't even like to say better than that, because nothing in their works is accurate when it comes to niggers. That is the only accurate statement. The only thing the white man can do for the black man is protect himself from it. And if he doesn't protect himself from it, or if he allows a third party to sick those niggers on him, his society will in turn be destroyed. In time, be destroyed. It may take longer or shorter, but it will in time be destroyed. That's the truth of the matter. You will not find it in any socialist or Christian text, because it's true. Now, this woman says, okay, my kitchen is an original English rose design with units made from metal. And, it's, you know, all this old, this good old stuff you used to see in your grandmother's thing. Like, the phone is bright pink Bakelite. Not really sure how that's pronounced, Bakelite or Bakelite. Even my crockery is original 1950s. So let's get to the more slightly more political comments. But the point is, she's happy in a defined sex role. The Judeo-capitalist spirit of Judeo-modernity is people are wholly interchangeable. They can all do this or that, and women have to get out in the workforce. And what do? Well, used to be that a white man, I've said this before, I'll say it again, white man working as a waiter in a restaurant had enough money to raise a family. How about that guy we were talking about, the Imbrunonis? You know, the guy comes over and he's got nine people living in a single flat, and he's able to raise that family on his work as a laborer. Can you do that today? I mean, I know the middle class people like to say that, you know, you can, and people just have to work. It's pretty fucking hard when you have medical bills and you have the government, even if you're in the low end, taking all the taxes out for Social Security. There's not much left over. I mean, this is the point where, no, you really can't. Even if you live properly, you behave properly, you have the right values, and you save your money. I mean, it's pretty much a system where you're going to be drawn into the government at one point or another, either by taking their money or by, you know, paying their taxes. To where you can't afford to do what you want to do. It didn't used to be like that. The feds used to only take a couple percent in taxes. And a man could work at a low-level service job or simple working-class job while raising a large family. It's not like that today. By design, they've, in the guise of liberating the woman, what they've done is drive them into the workforce so that they could double the taxes. Even to say double is ridiculous. So that they could raise the taxes to like 50%. Right? So no one has any time. The woman can't stay home and be nice and fresh and have a nice cooked meal ready for the man so he can actually enjoy life when he's not working. No, they both come home tired and harassed. They scream at each other. They eat some microwave food. They bitch at the kids if they dare to have one or two. And then they watch TV and go to bed and do the whole thing again. That's not any kind of a life. Used to be, you know, land was cheap. Maybe my grandparents bought their property originally for like $12,000. They had maybe 8-10 acres, you know, on the outskirts of town. And my grandfather was just, you know, like this Iron Brony, or, you know, he worked, you know, he drove a truck. He worked at a mill at one point. He worked in labor at various, you know, handyman type jobs. And, you know, he'd come home. He had four kids. Five, actually. One died. One was born, stillborn, the original one. But, you know, he'd work, come home at midday, and my grandmother would make him a big meal, and then he'd go back and work till 5, and then they'd go off and have a picnic. My uncle made another book out of my grandfather's diary in like the 20s and 30s. I haven't read it yet, but it's good stuff. And I hope you have people doing that kind of stuff for your kids, and so that they know how life was, because each decade of time will never be repeated. And so that we're not flies of a summer, to use Burke's figure, we need to know what came before us, and we need to relate what happened to us, and pass this on as a legacy for the people who come after us, so that they're part of something that's growing and extending through time. That gives it meaning, apart from religion, entirely apart from religion. Religion is made up. It's out of the head. This stuff is real. And this is the way it used to be. Large farm families, and they didn't live in the suburbs and have no time and be crabby all the time and couldn't trust their kids going out and playing with anybody. They were all relative. It's a better way to live. And I mean, that's why I live where I live in part. My whole life, I grew up in the suburbs, and we moved multiple times. So, you know, you're ripped away from people you might know, and, you know, things are temporary, and
I don't think the suburbs are bad. I don't think cities are bad, but there's an awful lot to be said for living in a small town where you can get everywhere in 2-3 minutes, and there's space. I like many Aryans, I don't like to be crammed in near to people. I find people, I'm a little bit wary of them. I want them to be at least, you know, an acre or two away from me and have my interactions when I choose. I don't want to be jammed in there. That's what cockroach is like. Maybe there are times of life when it's okay, but I think space is just native to the Aryan spirit. Again, a totally non-religious thing. Independence, space, respect, privacy, dignity, all the things that Jews hate and don't understand and fear, those are the good things in life for us. And since they're a different species and can't understand that, but can destroy it and can use other species to destroy it, we must destroy them.
So this, she says, I only ever wear 50s clothing, such as tight pencil skirts, a white blouse, and a wide belt. Kevin wears modern clothes for work, but at weekends he wears a smart suit and a trilby, which I believe is a kind of hat. I admit, I am in retreat from the 21st century. When I look at the reality of the world today, with all the violence, greed, and materialism, I shudder. I don't want to live in that world. And so, just as the Italians in Detroit remove their ancestors because they want them to feel safe and protected, and they want to feel the way themselves, and they're trying to pull it away. We got to get away from these niggers. We got to get away from this horrible Jew-inspired violence and greed and materialism. This is a reaction that whites are starting to have around the world. Why do we have to live like this? It's all lies and murder, and you got to have this money, and you got to be that to be cool. Why do we allow this? Isn't there a better way to go than what we built? What we've allowed the Jews to take from us and create of our world? Throwing us into $100 trillion of debt, starting new wars around the clock? Filling the air with these beats from these niggers and calling it music? Violence, carjacking, drugs, general stupidity, lack of respect for authority. I mean, this is one reaction of a legitimate person. Like, God, she's even afraid to have kids. Joan thinks modern life is too hectic and likes to take her time. And that in itself is a large measure. If you're going to live the corporate life, you are not going to have much time to yourself. Corporate jobs are, the left makes fun, but I mean, it takes a lot of work. I don't care what you do, anything higher than a secretary, it takes a lot of work to keep running and to keep moving, to keep your clothes clean, to keep your car functioning, and to try to put the money away. Even if you're doing it right, it's difficult. And on top of that, there just isn't very much time to do what you might want to do that's more important, because it doesn't bring in money. And you have to have heaping scoops of money in today's world, because God forbid you ever get sick or injured or anything, it costs a hell of a lot. Even if you don't and you're paying insurance, it costs a hell of a lot. And of course, you'll never read an article about greedy government taking more and more and more in every possible form of tax from the people who earn the money. You'll never read an article like that. Only private people are greedy, by the way the government-controlled media reports it. She says, neither of us drinks, and our social life revolves around visiting like-minded friends for tea and cakes. I try not to interact with the modern world too much at all. Shopping in supermarkets is an ordeal, and I only recently realized that Tony Blair is no longer prime minister, as I don't read newspapers. They are just too distressing. We do have a television set, but we hide it in a retro cabinet and only watch things like Miss Marple, Poirot, that's a detective story, and Foyle's War. My obsession began as a teenager when I loved old movies because they seemed to represent a halcyon time when women were more feminine and men more protective. I was marking time until I met the right man. Kevin and I met in 1993 at a 50s convention, and we had an old-fashioned courtship before he proposed. I was ecstatic because I had found someone with the same passion for the period. Today's society is all rush, 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 whereas I like to take my time. I never leave the house without lipstick on, and I also like to help neighbors, collecting their pensions and doing shopping for them, just as women in the 1950s would do. It may sound silly, but living like this really does make me happier. As though I'm existing in one of those old-fashioned TV shows where everything is always wonderful. My despair at the modern world is one of the reasons why we haven't had children. And this is it. I mean, this is the bottom line. In this imaginary world is where the rubber meets the road. The Jews have created a world so horrible that their competing species don't want to breed out of simple despair. It's also funny, and yet another reason that the Catholics hate the Nazis is that German childbirth rates were higher under Hitler than they were under the Catholics. And yet theirs is supposed to be the philosophy of life and hope and love, and the Nazis are these evil eugenicists who are bent on killing people. The Catholics lose all of their intellectual courage when it comes to the Nazis. They don't have the character to judge the Nazis on the facts. That's why Jones descends to such levels as he would never tolerate. Indeed, he writes a 1,200-page book basically to give the other side of church-Jew relations. Jews, obviously owning the publishing houses, have put out the books that define who defines controls, as Orwell says. Well, if Jews write the history, they determine it. He's writing the other side. He has to print it himself. Even though his work is tremendous, no Jew house in New York will put it out. Why? Because it's not politically correct. It doesn't toe the Jew line in history. It shows Jews to be the bad guys. And yet, when Jones encounters people who did an even better job of fighting the Jew, he drops to Jewish standards of historiography. He cites Jewish queers and Jewish liars, people he would reject if they were writing about the church, or at least he would point out their motives, cite them and show where they were wrong. But when it comes to the Jews, why, it's perfectly fine in his magazine to claim they're all a bunch of homosexuals. And blah, 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 had a record. Oh, yeah, the files are at the Viennese police station. Yeah, that's the ticket. Again, we see he's found, he's lifted, he's hoisted by his own petard. Why does Jones drop his standards when it comes to the Nazis? This is something common across the right. When they want to go across against people they feel are to their right, perhaps better put, when they want to go against people who they feel are more, who are less respectable than they are and whom it is safer to shit on, why, they become Jews themselves in their attacks. And they start citing, well, Fleming's even worse than Jones. Jones is good. Fleming is simply pathetic. Fleming cites all the, we are driven by hate, whereas he's driven by love. You know, we weren't the ones down there trying to destroy everyday morality in the South by sticking niggers in white classrooms. He was. He worked with a Jewish communist who affected the takeover for America. Jones merely drops the standards in relation to the pink swastika and claims the Nazis were all a bunch of butch fags. And he didn't write the article, but he allowed it to appear, and he allowed his guy to get away with citing a bunch of lies in doing so, and basically doing what the Jews now do to the Catholic Church, claiming their priests are all a bunch of child molesters. Jones allows Catholics to say that about Nazis in his magazine. Interesting. So, as always, the people who are professional moralists turn out to be the worst of the lot upon closer examination. Maybe not the worst of the lot, but they turn out to be ordinary hypocrites, ordinary keepers of the double standard. It's only the Nazis who dare to apply the same standard to everybody. And that's what leads them to be racialist and eugenicists, Jew namers and Jew fighters and Jew killers, destroyers of that which destroyed Europe. That's what the Nazis were. Higher standards than the Catholics have. Anybody can get into the Catholic Church. As we've seen, or we're going to see, all it takes is a few drops of water. Took more than that to get into SS. Had to prove your lineage for about 300 years. Had to prove your morals. Had to prove your character. Had to prove your physical fitness. Anybody can become a Catholic. You just got to go down to a local slop house, stumble in the door. The drunker you are, the better it is. I think they get triple Yahtzee word points if you're a syphilitic drunk. Sane, self-controlled people don't need Catholicism. The West is the blood. It is not the church. That is a lie, and a big lie. Common on the right. To continue with a woman, she says, Some women ask me if I feel patronized by being a housewife and spending my time caring for Kevin, but I never would. At work, he gets teased because he's the only one with homemade cakes and even homemade jam in his sandwiches, but I often wonder if his colleagues aren't slightly jealous that he has a wife who devotes herself to his happiness. How many men these days can really say that? And that, you know, I was talking last night with someone. I mean, that's what the Jews have done, is made it. They've made it a free agent society. So as we see in sports, you know, someone's always open to the highest bidder, and, oh, it's a business. You got to go where they're going to pay you the most money. Well, that attitude has filtered down to everybody, so that people are always looking to trade up. Now, that's not a wholly bad thing, but in lots of ways it is bad, because there are aspects of life where the loyalty, which is kind of a triumph of aesthetics over the market, is objectively better for people than for society as a whole than market values. So if you ditch, you know, your wife because you can find someone younger and hotter, that may be better for you individually, or it may not be better for you individually, but it's certainly worse for everybody on the whole. But again, this is the flip side of communist totalitarianism in Russia, is hyper-individualism in the capitalist countries. But of course, as Jones deserves credit for documenting, which we've never got around to yet in Libido Dominandi, all the social policies they tried here in America were tried in the Soviet Union in like 19 to 20, in the early 20s. And they were such miserable failures, free love and easy divorce, that even the commies had to scale back on them. They destroyed so many thousands of people's lives. So really, the Jews have a pathetic record as nation records, or a great record as nation records. And the clear upshot of it is they need to be destroyed. If we want to live in our own world by our own values, we have to destroy the Jews. There's no easy way around it. I don't say that out of bravado or out of desire to participate in killings. I say it because analytically, that is the conclusion that one draws when looking at it. You got to kill them. They can't help what they are. It's disrespectful. Just as Jones would say, oh, no, conversion, it's not a racial thing. It's yeah, we know. You claim that, but the facts are otherwise. It is a racial thing. The Jews are not captives of the rabbis. The rabbis were produced by the Jews. Yeah, there's a feedback loop. Yeah, the rabbis help, but no, the Jews are the type of people who produce rabbis. There were Jews long before there were rabbis. And they acted like Jews long before they were rabbis. They didn't suddenly become Jews when they rejected the rabbis. They were Jews all along. That's their problem. We just have to realize that Jews are the problem and the correct way to deal with them. Get rid of the Jews, and once you get rid of the Jews, the Jew is the thing that is giving the nigger the power, so that any site that or person who obsesses about black crime, after a point, it becomes pointless. Once people understand that blacks are the problem, and as even the veiled quotes from these people show, they understand that blacks are the problem, even if they won't fully speak it. You have to understand what's causing that problem, what's preventing us from doing something about that problem. That's why this show exists, to explain to you it's the Jew who has empowered the nigger to destroy your community. Blacks don't have a head as a community. The Jews saw to that. They have only the head the Jews want them to have, and that is a front man. Just like George Bush is a front man for them doing their bidding in foreign policy, the niggers are front men for them on the civil rights front. And they blame whites. And if they ever stopped blaming whites and told whites to be self-reliant, why, they'd be kicked out on their ass. They wouldn't appear in the media any longer. If Jesse Jackson were to one day wake up and go, gosh darn it, we need to quit blaming whites and get our own act together. Stop, you know, impregnating women and running off and taking welfare. We need to work hard and get married, get an education, and live to the best of our abilities. If he ever did something like that, you'd never see him on TV again. The Jews wouldn't put him on there. TV makes people. It's the same thing with the Christian charlatans. The ones who toe the line are the ones who get to get on TV. And even though they make fun of them, they're still allowed to get on there and collect money from the idiots. But if they ever stopped supporting Israel, they'd be gone in a flash.
You know, Jews control our media, says Billy Graham to Richard Nixon. Oh, I know. And they've got a stranglehold in the on the American public, and they're sending us down the toilet. We've got to get rid of that, or else, you know, our country's over. Oh, I know, said Richard Nixon. I just can't ever say that. So the President of the United States is afraid to speak the truth about Jews, and we think we have a free country. And when that fact is reported in the press, it's treated as, oh, isn't this horrible anti-Semitism? No, the horrible part is the President of the country says we're controlled by Jews, and our country's going down the drain. The President and the top Christian leader say the same thing about Jews that the Nazis say. That's your story.
Oh, the anti-Semitism, terrible.
Everybody says the same thing about Jews. But you know what? Jews aren't like the weather. Something can be done about Jews, and the thing to be done about them is to kill them, exterminate them, get rid of them. You don't argue or reason with a cockroach, you step on it.
Aye, you call the Jews a cockroach. Aye, this is anti-Semitism. Make it stop. Hate crime laws. Aye. Can I believe the hate being expressed here?
They've done enough crying. Let's give them something to cry about. And when the last Jew is safely underground mumbling, build a museum of Jewish crimes. Document all this stuff we've been talking about all these many years, and that will be their last memory of the Jew on earth. Disgusting, despicable people that we got rid of before it utterly ruined us. And that's really the battle of our times, and that's where the brains and the guts of our young men ought to be directed. That's where the heroism lies. You want to be a hero, don't go into, you know, dirt bike racing or something ridiculous like that. Liberate your people from the Jew. Young white genius, if you can do it, you will go down as the most remarkable man in history. Let's look at a couple of these other women before. Then we'll take a one song music break, and then we'll come back and read some of the Jones. Debbie Clulow lives in Upper Teen in Staffordshire with her husband, Martin, 38, who's a contractor. Debbie says, when I see a girl walking down the street wearing next to nothing, I think, why don't you have more respect for yourself? Other women may laugh at my determination to make my home perfect for my husband, Martin, but I enjoy spending my leisure time baking cakes and sewing. She says, I really believe women today have lost their way with binge-drinking ladettes. That's the British term for young men who aren't acting right, as either yobs or lads. And children as young as 11 going out in tiny tops. The age of innocence has been lost, and it is such a shame. My idol is Ava Gardner, and when I watch her films, as I do all the time, I think that so much has been lost from today's society. I've made my home a shrine to the 40s, and I only ever wear clothes from that decade. Other people may laugh at me, but I really don't care. I think I have a far happier marriage than many other people I meet because we have strict demarcations in our roles. So both of these women say exactly the same thing, where they're very happy, and a large part of what makes them happy is the strict sex roles that we've been taught by the Jews are so evil. See, that's a common thread in Jewish history. They're always breaking down barriers and liberating people, but it's very much like PETA letting rabid monkeys out of cages. What did the Jews do that's so liberating? Well, they liberate niggers to attack white women. They liberate niggers to attack white communities. They liberate women from sex roles, force them into the workforce, and then take most of their money in taxes, thereby destroying home lives and guaranteeing that fewer children will be produced. So any time a Jew uses the word liberation, think enslavement. I have spent so many happy hours sourcing retro furniture and kitchen gadgets for our home, and gradually we are eradicating every trace of the modern age. There you go. She has eradicated the modern age in her own home, just as we need to eradicate the modern age. And as one Jewish scholar said, modernity is Judaism. What scholars so-called called modernity, that is the breakaway from tribes and tradition into modernity, where everyone flies everywhere and knows everything and fucks everyone and eats every kind of food and listens to every kind of music, that's Judaism. Mixing these people and leading the mulatto mess, the mystery meat melange, leading them around by the nose. So eradicating the modern age means eradicating Jews, letting whites live as whites. Let Reagan be Reagan, let whites be whites.
And these people go all the way. They have all the stuff in their house. They have a 40s car. They dress 40s. I wouldn't dream of leaving the house without gloves and a hat. When we go out, we do attract a lot of attention, and some people laugh, but I think that's their problem. We aren't friendly with anyone who doesn't share our love of the 40s. Some people might think I'm hiding my head in the sand, harking back to an age that is long gone. But to me, the 1940s was a time when people were much more friendly to each other. There's a good example of the wrong comparison. Friendlier is correct, not much more friendly. They really cared about their neighbors. As it is, I hardly know the people who live next to us. Of course, I'm not such a Luddite that I don't use modern medicines and other comforts of modern life when I need to, but I find a genuine happiness in living in a time when life was simpler. And so these people have more moral courage than most adult white males in politics, where they should have moral courage. They're willing to live their life on the street, even if it brings them ridicule. That's the one thing they say people fear most is speaking in public. They're afraid to get up there, and they're actually afraid to act on their real beliefs. Well, at least these people are in their limited way. We need to see a lot more of that from the white community. The Jew trades on people's fear of sticking out for the crowd. He trades on people being afraid to stand up to his claim that he speaks for our community rather than we do. No place for hate here. You know what? The minute people do stand up to him, what happened? Oh, they retreat. Because they don't have the numbers. They're brazen until someone stands up to them. Then they back off. They mumble and they start plotting murders in the back room. And then there's even a third woman who is into the 30s. Big band sounds. Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers. Again, she says, ideally, I'd spend all day in my penny being apron. Women were these amazingly glamorous creatures with their perfect hair and immaculate makeup, and they were treated with such respect by men. Men and women knew their roles in society, and there wasn't all this pressure on women to have to go out and work and to try to be equal to men. I do work part-time, but only because we need the money. However, we still have clearly defined roles in the home, and I am the one who does most of the cooking and cleaning. I adore baking cakes, and if I had my way, I would spend all of my days in my penny making my house look immaculate. Martin and I spend hours sourcing the clothes from the 1930s, and I'm always dressed in period costumes. First, I was a bit dubious about going out dressed in 30s clothing, but I'm totally used to it now. The 30s was a much more moral time, and there was a real camaraderie between people. I try to escape from where we are now and rarely read newspapers because I find today's world so depressing. The pace of life today is so hectic, and I think there is so much pressure on women to be like men. It is all wrong. I love to wear dresses and skirts, look immaculate, and be treated like a lady. My home is entirely decorated with 1930s furniture, wallpaper, carpets, and ornaments. Retreating to this world is our sanctuary. And I guess they made a TV show out of this in Britain, and it's probably torrentable at some point. But the point here is, this rejection is ultimately a desire for racial homogeneity and the kind of culture that produces, a white culture un-Jewed, or at least not Jewed down to the everyday level, even if it was Jewed at the top political level. They still hadn't perfected the use of the modern media technology to Jew the lives of ordinary white people, whether in Britain or in the U.S. And so these people are living by their healthy instincts, and they have enough moral courage to go all the way through with it, and that's impressive. And it's just a shame that, like, civilized society becomes a private hobby, something that you do indoors, because it's not legal to have a civilized public life. No, that stinking bum can't be chased out of the library. He has the right to shit himself and sit there and sleep for 8 hours. No, that nigger has the right to beat an overturned pail and loiter around all day and curse, make lewd comments at women. He's got that right. No, that Mexican has every right, even though he's not a citizen, to stand over there and piss in public and look for part-time labor that will drive your husband out of business. He has the right. You have no rights. No, that Jew has every right to erect a menorah in the public square, but you have no equal right to put up a Christian symbol. You have to take down the commandments, take them out of the courthouse. all the rights for the Jews and their tools, no rights for you who built this country. That's what it's come to. And a lot of people will observe some of the symptoms and they'll give you what they think is the answer. But the truth, the bottom line is the Jews did this. The Jews must be killed. They must be exterminated. As a group, as a whole, exterminate them. Even Hitler didn't get that part right. Don't believe what they say about Hitler. They lie about him like they do about everyone else. The correct solution to Jews is to exterminate them. Get them out of white lands, exterminate them. They have nuclear weapons in Israel. It might be hard to get them over there, but we can exterminate the Jews in our land. So Jews must be gotten rid of. They're not for debate. They're not for dialogue. They are for exterminating. They are our enemy. It is biological. Culture is just a symptom of the different mentality of the different species. They are parasitic, hostile, nation-wrecking species. They lay our eggs in our Aryan caterpillar, and their eggs eat us. We have every right, and more than that, we have our every duty to liberate our people from the Jews. That's what this radio show is about. Telling you the truth for the first time in your life. The full truth. Because you can handle it. It's not complex, as various pseudo-intellectuals claim, who have a financial stake in not being kicked off the air. We've been kicked off more servers than we can count. Why? Because we're telling you the unvarnished truth. It's not profitable. It's not cool. It's not this or that. But it's correct. Exterminate the Jews, live as free white men the way free white men do, which is like these women, civilized, with time, leisure, because the government isn't running everything. It doesn't have taxes through the roof. Now we'll take a one-song break, and then we will return and discuss some of E. Michael Jones. We won't labor it too long. We'll try to wrap up by the top of the hour or shortly thereafter. Let's see. I think I'm going to play Mr. Bryan Adams, Summer of 69.
I got my first real six string, rolled it out to five and dime. Played it till my fingers bled. Was a summer of 69. Me and some guys from school had a band and we tried real hard. Yeah!
And we're back. Let's see here. Oh, we had someone posted, and this is what's cool about the interactive nature. Someone said Gratiot, G-R-A-T-I-O-T, east side of Detroit is pronounced Grashit. Grashit and shit by the locals. Not Grashit. I'm just making a joke there, but Grashit. Grashit. Grashit good. Dun-dun-dun-dun. Anyway, that's good to know. I am educated now, whereas before I labored in ignorance. Probably stepped on a worm. We have I for one welcome our new insect overlords. I've got that clip up under media criticism. A lot of people know that from The Simpsons. It's one of the best bits of media criticism ever in the history of the world, as it shows you what cheap sellouts, what cheap whores. And someone said they're expensive whores. That's true of the Washington class, but you got to realize most journalism is not in the Washington class making six figures. It's out here in the boonies making $20,000 a year, reading, you know, with large eyeballs, local news reports. Anyway, I'm glad to have that piece of information. So Gratiot is pronounced Grashit. Grashit good. East side of Detroit. And boy, that reminds me of Yankee Jim. He probably would have chimed in right there when I was saying that. He probably had some stories about Grashit and shit from back in the day when he was in Detroit. I miss that guy. I miss his voice. I really liked his voice. He had a very good, strong, I always thought, masculine Merle Haggard kind of, maybe the word is timber to it. But, yeah, spare a thought and a prayer for Yankee Jim. Prayer if you're religious. I'm sure he would have had a lot to say about Grashit. Grashit. I'll try to get it right. But anyway, let's move on to, we'll just do a few pages out of chapter 4. I really am going to wrap this up in about 10-15 minutes. So, you know, that means like half an hour, but in Linder terms. But anyway, and I apologize. I'm simply not well educated enough to give a huge amount of commentary on some of this stuff, because I'm not super well grounded in the history of the church or the Middle Ages. So I'm learning as I tell you this, and hopefully teach a lot of you this. Certainly, you know, from what I know about Jews, which is a substantial amount, everything that you find in their history backs up what you see in their present. They've always been basically a scummy race of betrayers, interlopers, and subverters. And there's absolutely nothing in what Jones writes that contradicts that. Everything reinforces it. And what we're talking about now, we've been talking about Julian the Apostate trying to rebuild the temple. We talked about that, and we talked about the congealing of the Christians and the Jews competing for customers along with the Romans, and the Christians kind of won out when the Roman emperor adopted their religion, and then you had the crucifixion of Jesus, and then you had, over the next few hundred years before the fall of Rome, you had kind of the congealing of both doctrines. In the various councils that the Catholics had, and then the Jews got their Talmud together. And then, you know, it took about 800 years, and a convert to Catholicism from Judaism showed the Catholics, who I guess weren't paying much attention, that, hey, you know, you ought to see what's written in these books. My God. And he showed the Catholics the Talmud and showed them these horrible blasphemies and these imprecations and these maniacal attitudes that are shared by the rabbis and the Jews. So the church grew wise to the Jews, although it did not adopt the proper policy toward them. It still kept this psychic Judaism known. And I am really responsible for still not knowing how to pronounce that, but I will look it up before next show. Their policy is that basically Jews are unconverted Christians, and the problem is not racial. The problem is that they haven't converted. If they do convert, great, but you can't force conversion on them. You can't do anything to them. You can't harm the Jews as long as they're not subverting your society, which even for them to have that as a policy shows that they don't understand Jews. They're inherently subverters. That's what they are. Who can tell the Jew? Who can tell the dancer from the dance? Who can tell the Jew from the Jewing? I mean, after a while, you know, I say the Jew came first. The Jew was a subset of people that, for biological reasons, acted and thought like that in that particularly treacherous, xenophobic way. And over time, that turned into doctrines. But the behavior came from the genes. And then, you know, you've got a feedback loop. It's going to attract. It's just like paranoids are going to attract the kind of response they fear, that originally that response isn't there, but over time it is there. They bring it on themselves. You know, you get thrown in the tarred corral for paranoids. That confirms your belief that people are out to get you. Well, they weren't out to get you. They just get tired of your fucking paranoia. But it strokes them, just the way blacks hate being... They love it when they see racism. It confirms what they believe in internally. Facts be damned. Most white people bend over backward to help blacks to the extent they have to deal with them. All right. Anyway, Chapter 4, False Conversion and the Inquisition. We'll just go through a few pages of this on show 20 here. We're making our way to the good stuff in the 20th century, but this older stuff is good too because it shows a preponderance of evidence reveals a pattern to Jewish behavior that you don't really need to read more than... You know, you know how a person's whole character can be revealed in basically about 5 seconds of watching them? You can kind of pick up what they really are. Well, it's the same with Jews. I mean, any instance in history that they're involved in, you can pretty much get the idea of what they are, just like people in the forum are writing about Pikes. And Pikes they're actually white racially, but they're just like a scum clan. Now, see, this is actually kind of... Glad that thought came up, because this is actually how I personally believe Jews developed, and I don't know that there's any proof of this, or could be any proof, but my belief about Jews is that they developed as there probably was a base of people that was more or less, you know, like every other kind of people. This particular group was a subset of clans of people who were more obnoxious than normal. In some biological way, they had all the features we today identify with Jews, and somehow they... Enough of them accreted into a twined ball that they were, you know, successful. They were successful enough to develop these doctrines and stick around long enough that over time they just grew into what are today known as Jews. That's how I think it happened. I think it's biological. And the biology produced the culture, and it happened that it worked well enough that they survived. I don't see any God in there. I don't see any... I don't see it as a culture first thing. I see it as biological first, turning into culture and then reinforcing itself continually. Because people who were born who didn't have that paranoid outlook would blend into the broader society. There was some interchange with it. It was like a gas permeable membrane. I mean, plenty of people were able to leave Judaism. The people who were the least paranoid left it. The people who were the least xenophobic left it. Leaving a harder internal core that has more and more teachings that are better and better defined and stronglier inculcated in people. Over time, you get you know, a nucleus of people who are just fucking assholes. And they've been inbred with that for hundreds of years. They've just increased that strain. I think that's what it was. I think it was a strain of people that over time grew stronger and stronger and had exactly the feedback loop that I'm talking about. But that's my private theory. I don't know of any evidence that backs it up other than the evidence I'm aware of that shows that Jews are biologically different, such as the xenophobia baby study that was done that McDonald cites in his book, which puts the lie to Jones's claim that baptism turns a Jew into a human. Well, when they do studies of babies, they find that the babies who react, they put the babies, have I talked about this before? They studied these babies by introducing a stranger, someone who was not their parent, in the room with the baby and seeing how the baby reacted. The Aryans took it in stride, the Aryan babies. The Jew babies went apeshit. So right there you've got biological proof. These are not, just the same way like babies will react to niggers with dislike and fear, then they prefer whites. It's the same thing with Jews. They're much more xenophobic. They accuse us of being inbred and xenophobic, but they are the inbred xenophobes. They are far stronger in that way than whites are. In fact, the problem that we whites have in fighting the Jew is it's hard to get whites to even recognize Jews as enemies, whereas Jews see basically everybody else as an enemy, and that's totally biological. Yeah, it's backed up by culture and what they write in their books, but ultimately that stuff's biological. They are not like us. Jews are like people with feelers. They. I don't know if you've ever been around Jews. I've been around plenty of Jews, and they're not all the same, but generally they're very suspicious, and they have this way, they look as though they have imaginary feelers that are always sensing for any kind of opposition to them, or any kind of, not even opposition to them, but recognition of them, because recognition of the Jew and opposition to it are the same thing. I mean, They Live, the movie They Live, you have to watch that, or show your friend. If you're trying to teach your friends about Jews, you have to use very simple lead-ins. One of them is to show them the film They Live and say, that's what we're trying to get across about Jews. Yeah, they look like they're white, but they're not white. And that's why someone was, the guy who did the comic, someone was criticizing them because the Jews didn't look Jewy enough like A. Wyatt Mann. No. Those Jews were good. They should look basically like whites, but just a little different, a little rattier, but not totally exaggerated. It helps people to understand, yeah, they look like us, so it's easy to make the mistake and think they are like us, but they're not like us. Use They Live. Use books like this, you know, for the higher-end people, the Jewish revolutionary spirit, to understand. And get them to understand these are people who look like us but are not like us, and in fact are deadly hostile to us. They're lethal to our culture and our society. They're the ones who are saying we can't live the way we want to live. And let me see. People are Skyping me, but I can't respond all the time. Someone says, okay, Alex, damn it, got busy and tuned in late again. Well, this is going to be archived, and I'm not taping it, so the archive's not going to be messed up. It says, just wanted to say I like what you're doing with the crazies in the new corral. I never posted much at VNNF just because any attempts at serious discourse always got dragged down by the ego loons. That's a good term, ego loons. Thanks. You're welcome, and we're going to keep doing it. And anybody who doesn't want to clean up their spelling and control their behavior is going to be tarred, corralled, or simply banned. But, anyway, let's do a few pages of Jones here, and we'll see what rats the Jews are. It just comes through anytime you cite the facts. Citing the facts about Jews, as I've said, truth is an anti-Semite. Truth is anti-Semitic. Facts are anti-Semitic. Because the minute you start discussing Jewish behavior, looking at it objectively, saying here's what Jews did, and then looking at it subjectively, here's the kind of society I want to live in, and here's what Jews do, you see that Jesus, these really are the enemy of our people. Everything they do undermines us. Nothing they do builds us up. They're just bad. They're wrong. They're bad. Any way you want to look at it, morally, biologically, spiritually, I don't care. They all lead to the same conclusion. Jews got to be gone. Get rid of them. Now let's see. It says, the Jews were viewed, and this is chapter 4, False Conversion and the Inquisition. The Jews were viewed as a subversive and exploitative fifth column in 14th century Spain. So we're talking about the 1300s in Spain here. Indeed, they had always been viewed that way there. The history of Jewish subversion in Spain could not be erased. There was too much evidence. The Jews had conspired, this is E. Michael Jones saying this, the Jews had conspired with the Moors to overthrow the Visigoths. Now, the Visigoths are a Germanic tribe. They're made up of great people like Linders, who cruised over from the middle of Europe all the way into Spain. And actually, I think they went all the way into northern Africa. And you know, here's an interesting thing. If you ever seen the films of Pedro Almodovar, he's got some of those women in there. And one of the, when I saw one of those women, I'm like, wow, that's where Picasso got the whole fucking idea of cubism, is from one of these women who looked very much like a cross between a Germanic type, like one of these Visigoths, and like a native, you know, Iberian or small dark Celtic type. Because you know how he draws like the one half of the face versus the other half? There was a woman who looked exactly like that. I'm like, my God, it had to have been seeing a woman like that that gave Picasso the idea of drawing the same face from two different angles at the same time. That's my own personal belief. I wish I could cite the film and the face, but it just looked, for whatever genetic reason, it looked exactly like one of those cubist drawings. But it was a real person. And I've seen two Almodovar films. I can't remember what their name was. I'm pretty sure he's the guy, because I don't know any other Spanish directors. Anyway, That's just my own personal pet theory I've thrown in there. That's my second pet theory in the last 5 minutes. Anyway, if you can't give out your own personal theories in your own radio show, then where can you? Let's see. Anyway, so the Jews had conspired with the Moors to overthrow the Visigoths. When their conspiracy became apparent, persecution followed. In 694, the 17th Council of Toledo, and that is, let me say parenthetically, if you ever go to Europe, go to Spain, go to Toledo. That is the most beautiful small town I have ever seen. I mean, it's got very tight little alleyways and whitewashed walls. And Spain is very dry and almost kind of like I would imagine Africa is, much more than I would have thought before I went there, or at least that part of it. You go up there and you can see all the way down. You can see the river running through, and they got what does Toledo have? They have a painting by either El Greco or Vasquez. They have some fantastic stuff up there, but it's just a beautiful little town. And well worth, it's like a day trip from Madrid, so go there if you get a chance, Toledo, Spain. In 694, the 17th Council of Toledo proclaimed, "The impious Jews dwelling within the frontiers of our kingdom have entered into a plot," and this is 694, "have entered into a plot with other Hebrews in regions beyond the seas in order that they might act as one against the Christian race." 700 this is, right? Couple hundred years after the fall of Rome, 700 years after Jesus bit it, the Jews are conspiring internationally with their brothers across seas to undermine the Christian race. Interesting wording. Through their crimes, they would not only throw the church into confusion, but indeed, by their attempted tyranny, have essayed to bring ruin to the fatherland and to all the population. This is funny. This is like 1,000 years before Hitler, and they're talking like that. 1,500 years before Hitler, I guess. Well, my math's a little off. Anyway, in 852, the Annales Bertinianos described the loss of Barcelona. Barcelona is up on the, if you know how Spain is like a glove, it's on like the heel of the hand at the bottom up on the coast. I've been there also. Very nice. Had some, that's where you get like paella, that seafood dish that's famous in Spain. There's all kinds of stuff up there. Took the train up there. Let's see. Described the loss of Barcelona because the Jews played the traitor, allowing the Moors to capture it. So the Jews are helping the Moors take over Spain. The Jews, quote, defined themselves as the antithesis of Christianity and conspired with Christendom's enemies. Although they prospered under the Visigoths in Spain, they nevertheless conspired with Arabs in Africa to overthrow the Visigothic monarchy. At the beginning of the 8th century, they used their contacts with African Jews to prepare the invasion of Mohammedan Berbers across the Straits of Gibraltar. When the Mohammedans conquered Spain, the Jews flourished, achieving one of the most sophisticated cultures in Europe. The Jews excelled in medicine and helped bringing Aristotle to Europe, but the flower of Sephardic culture drew its economic substance from unsavory roots. The Sephardic Jews grew rich on slaves and usury. We're going to talk about that a little. We had a thread on the forum talking about whether money can be loaned. Well, now you're going to hear about the consequences of prohibiting Christians from loaning money at interest. The result of that is to put all the money and power in the Jews' hands. All the money and most of the power. When the Spaniards began Reconquista, page 134, the Jews were not persecuted despite further acts of bad faith. This is how dumb these Christians are. You know, the Jews, oh, you bad little Jews, and then they take power away from them, and what do? He's quoting here. St. Fernando, on taking Cordoba, a Spanish town, from the Saracens, that is the Muslims, or the Turks, turned over four mosques to the large Jewish population to convert into synagogues and gave them one of the most delightful parts of the city for their homes, on two conditions, that they refrain from reviling the Christian religion and from proselytizing among Christians. The Jews made both promises and kept neither. So, what the Jew says and does are, oh shit, you wanted a check? I thought you wanted real money. You know, the Jew will say anything, but that's not what it will do. It will do what it has always done, and that is to undermine, subvert, and destroy. And the Christians persist. That's kind of the theme of this history. The Christians persist in not grasping the Jewish problem. Until finally, in the end, it goes even farther at Vatican II, and it's beyond, like, we won't torture and bother them as long as they don't subvert us. It's like, we even renounce our doctrine of supersession. That is, we even renounce that you can only go to heaven through Jesus and agree that, no, the Jews' covenant is still in effect in addition to ours. That's where they are now, I believe. I may be misstating, but the point is they have softened and weakened their position because they refuse to see the Jews for what they are and respond accordingly. And in fact, so far from going after their real enemy, the Jews, they go after the people who fight the Jews. That's when they get really vicious and drop their standards. So they're not acting manly, and they're not acting in line with courage and the facts. They're acting in line with their fear. They're taking counsel with their fears, as they like to put it. Even as Islam was rolled back to North Africa, the Jews continued to collaborate with the Muslims. Spanish Christians were persuaded that the Muslim invader had been welcomed by the Jews and assisted by them, with all this implied for national religious life of Spain. The Judeo-Muslim symbiosis that characterizes most of the Arab occupation gives considerable plausibility to the Christian view that in these two communities, alien in both faith and at law, Christendom faced an unfriendly alliance. So, now think about this now. Now you hear today's Jews are all, oh, the Islamo-fascists. The fact is, here was a Judeo-Islamist conspiracy against the white Christians. Jews will flip on a dime. Today they talk about Judeo-Christian, but yesterday in Spain, they talked about Judeo-Islamic tradition, whether or not they use that term. So, Jews are loyal only to Jews. They are not loyal to the U.S. They are not loyal to the white race. They are not loyal to the Christian church. They use them for their own purposes. Much of the civil order in Spain was enforced through canon law, but Jews, because they were not Christians, could not be touched by that law. The laws against blasphemy, for example, he quotes, could not be enforced against them. They could encourage heresy and in defense could claim the freedom of worship granted to the Jews. Jews were therefore allowed to engage in many subversive activities with impunity, which caused resentment. Because Jews were above or beyond the law, Christians were often tempted to apostatize to obtain freedom. Heretics like the Cathars of Leon, according to Lucas of Tui, writing about 1230, would circumcise themselves so that under the guise of the Jews they could, quote, propound heretical dogmas in dispute with Christians. What they dared not utter as heretics, they could freely disseminate as Jews. Because they had imbibed the best of the Arab culture, becoming learned in science and medicine, Jews traveled in court circles with an air of sophisticated impiety, which again caused resentment among the more pious but less wealthy and powerful. Jews thus became synonymous with enlightened decadence. The governors and judges of the cities listened approvingly to heresy put forth by Jews who were their friends and familiars, and if anyone, inflamed by pious zeal, angered these Jews, he was treated as if he had touched the apple of the eye of the ruler. They also taught other Jews to blaspheme Christ, and thus the Catholic faith was perverted. So now that sounds like America today, where anybody who says anything against the Jews will be attacked. Even more than by the Jews, they'll be attacked by the Christian sellouts and the ostensible whites like Bush and Cheney and the rest of them. Given their number and influence and sophistication under Muslim rule, Spain's tolerance of the Jews and their heretical ideas exceeded that of any other European nation. Given their wealth, the Jews engaged in ostentatious display, which increased the odium against them by contrast with the poverty of the Christians. Preachers easily used the Jews as material for their sermons, quote, powerfully aided by the odium which the Jews themselves excited through their ostentation, their usury, and their functions as public officials. The Oriental fondness for display was a grievous offense among the people. The wealth of the kingdom was, to a great extent, in Jewish hands, affording ample opportunity for the clergy to make invidious comparisons between the opulence of the Jews and the poverty of the Christian multitude, and the lavish extravagance with which they adorned themselves, their women and their retainers, was well fitted to excite envy more potent for evil because more widespread than the enmity arising from individual wrongs. So the Jews are basically lording it over the rest of the population, and much as they do today, being obnoxious and undermining stuff and being scummy, heretical, and blasphemous and decadent, just like today. The reign of Pedro the Cruel pointed out a paradox that would recur. The more powerful Jews grew, the more precarious their position became. Tolerance led to violence against Jews because the Christian majority felt that Pedro the Cruel had given his Jewish retainers control of the government and carte blanche to oppress them culturally and financially. Jews, Walsh reminds us, were disliked not for practicing the things that Moses taught, but for doing the things he had forbidden. They had profited hugely on the sale of fellow beings as slaves and practiced usury as a matter of course and flagrantly. They were also much given to proselytizing, even by a sort of compulsion. Thus they would force Christian servants to be circumcised and urge their debtors sometimes to abjure Christ. Again, Moses had condemned blasphemers to death, yet it was a custom of many Jews to blaspheme the prophet for whom Moses had warned them to prepare. But the biggest problem, says E. Michael Jones, was usury. As in the rest of Europe, Christians in Spain were forbidden to take interest on loans, thus granting a monopoly to Jews for a practice over which, over a relatively short period of time, could concentrate all a nation's capital in their hands. As in France at the beginning of the 12th century, Jews were hated because they were moneylenders. Moneylenders were hated because in a pre-capitalist economy, usurious compound interest could quickly ruin anyone caught in its snares. Then Jews could use their financial levers to exert cultural pressure on Christians to the detriment of faith, morals, and ultimately the social order. Jews were above the law, waging covert cultural warfare against the majority with impunity, a situation bound to lead to resentment. This is where the good stuff almost comes in. Their activities in certain areas became a reproach to Christian ideals. Usury was the interface with Christian culture which caused the most resentment. Again, usury was the interface with Christian culture which caused the most resentment. So the Jews are loaning the money. The Christians have forbidden Christians to loan money at interest. So that asinine policy has had very, very bad effects. And he goes into a description of, you know, how the Jews are bitching because they were only allowed to charge 33 1/3%, and they wanted to charge more, and they gave in to them. This or that ruler gave in to them. Faced with either starvation or usury, the farmers and small businessmen in 14th century Spain chose usury and watched their prosperity drain into the hands of Jews. Lea claims Jews recklessly aided the clergy in concentrating popular detestation on themselves. As later in Poland, which MacDonald describes, Jews were also hated because they were tax farmers, which brought them into direct and unpleasant contact with large numbers of Christians. The church tried to protect her flock from the predations of Jews involved in such activities by reminding rulers that canon law forbade employment of Jews in public office, but rulers, then as now, were too intent on short-term gain to consider long-term consequences, which often swept them from their thrones. I want to get to some of the resentment against usury combined with the suspicion that Jews were thwarting the Reconquista, that is the reconquering of Spain from Moors. By controlling the reconquered regions with the secret help of the Moors to cause the... Oh, he's got a typo there, but... No, he doesn't. The resentment against usury combined with the suspicion that Jews were thwarting the Reconquista by controlling the reconquered regions with the secret help of the Moors combined to cause the riots of the late 14th century. When the monarchs did nothing to curb Jew influence, the outraged citizens usually took the law into their own hands. Widespread bloodshed resulted. This is the good part. This is the natural reaction. Antisemitism is the natural reaction of the human to the Jew. Leniency only created more violence, as when Pedro the Cruel was perceived as giving his Jewish friends complete control of his government, a circumstance that led his enemies to call him a Jewish changeling and contributed to his denunciation of the Pope. By the end of the 14th century, the end of the 1300s, Spain's Christian population, convinced that Jews were planning to rule Spain, enslave the Christians, and establish the New Jerusalem in the West, took the law into their own hands. Widespread bloodshed and widespread conversion, sincere and forced, were the results. Henry's accession to the throne made the social situation more explosive because the church was freer to denounce the Jews for their predations and to stimulate popular response. Now, here's a guy we're going to hear about. Let's see. If the social situation was ready to explode into anti-Semitic violence, Ferran, I always had trouble pronouncing that, Ferran, Ferrocarril, Ferran Martinez was the spark that set off the explosion. F-E-R-R-A-N. Martinez was the spark that set off the explosion. Giving voice to popular grievances in his sermons, he brought the situation into the open. Martinez was Archdeacon of Eija, E-E-I-J-A, and the judicial representative of the Archbishop of Seville, or Sevilla. Lea calls Martinez a man of indomitable firmness, though without much learning. Like Hal Turner, he ruled the night. I'm just kidding. I was reading Hal's goodbye page, and it was pretty funny, honestly. But this guy, Ferran Martinez, is a priest who goes around preaching the truth about the Jews, getting them killed. Good guy, in other words. All right. I guess I was just interrupted there. I'm not going to go too much farther. We're talking about Ferran Martinez, and he's a priest who is inflaming people against the Jews. They're already angry, and he's lighting them on fire. King dies. Ferran Martinez is appointed. He orders the synagogues razed because he says they were constructed illegally, and Jews have a history of doing just that. So on December 8th, he orders the clergy under pain of excommunication to tear down the synagogues within 3 hours. Towns which housed synagogues were placed under interdict until they were torn down. Martinez was undoubtedly emboldened because King Juan I's successor was an 11-year-old invalid in no position to stop him. On January 15th, however, and we're just going to go through about... Let's see, another couple pages of this, and then we'll stop for the day. On January 15th, however, the chapter which had just promoted him deprived Martinez, Ferran Martinez, of his provisorship, again suspended his preaching faculties, and ordered him to rebuild the synagogues demolished at his command. Martinez remained defiant, declaring he repented of nothing. The mob in Seville grew bolder and more defiant, too, as a result of his continued preaching. When the authorities scourged two mob leaders, the mob was enraged and took its anger out on the Jews. This is the good part. This is how you solve the Jewish problem, folks. On June 9th, 1391, the storm finally broke. The uprising in Seville sacked the Juderia, the Jewry, the Jewish section, I guess, and 4,000 Jews were killed. I wonder how he knows that, but... Great, great news. The mob was so angry at what these Jews were doing to undermine Spain, helping the Moors and loaning money at excessive interest, that they went into the Jewish section and simply slaughtered them. The instincts of the mob are correct. The instincts of the lying, bought-off elite are false. And here, for once, the mob triumphs. It understands that the Jews are evil people and need to be put to the sword. Those who were not killed saved their lives by submitting to baptism. Two of the town synagogues were converted into churches for Christians who settled in the quarter that had before housed the town's Jews. The rioting then spread north, first to Cordova, then to Toledo and Burgos, until all of Castile was swept into the vortex of anti-Jewish violence. Castile, nominally under the rule of the boy king Henry the Invalid, was in a state of interregnum. No one had the power to stop the rioting, no one had the power to punish the rioters. As a result, 50,000 people died. Ain't that a shame? 50,000 fewer Alan Dershowitzes. 50,000 fewer... Who? I mean, there's a cornucopia of Jews you'd pick from that you're glad don't exist. 1 month after the riots in Seville, a group of boys marched on the Juderia in Valencia, the Jewish section of Valencia, crying, "The Archdeacon is coming! The Jews must choose between baptism and death!" When some of them pushed their way inside, the gates closed behind them, and those on the outside shouted that their companions were being murdered. When the civil authorities arrived, the Jews, out of fear, refused to open the gate. By thwarting the authorities, the Jews turned events over to the mob, which entered the Juderia over the roofs of adjoining houses and by the old rampart below the bridge. Once inside, the mob sacked the Juderia, and hundreds of Jews were murdered. Now they were liberated. In the Jewish quarter, the mob demanded what the boys had proposed at the beginning of the riot, baptism or death. The Jews who accepted baptism were spared, but the plundering continued unabated. The mob then broke into the jail and freed its prisoners. They then attacked the Balia, B-A-Y-L-I-A, and destroyed the royal registers as a way of evading payment of taxes. The same pattern repeated itself elsewhere as the rioting spread across Spain. In Palma, on the island of Majorca, 300 Jews were slain, and the remaining Jews only escaped death by accepting baptism. So this is how you deal with the Jews. Not baptism, but by slaughtering them. It is a scientific fact that a Jew who is dead cannot help the Muslims undermine your country. Think of how hypocritical these Jews are, that none of this history is ever allowed into the airwaves, even while the Jews are talking about, you know, a red-brown alliance between the Muslims and the Nazis. The Jews have worked with everyone in history. They will work with anyone to accomplish their goal. They've certainly worked with the Muslims. They worked with the Muslims to overthrow the Visigoths ruling Spain. They don't tell you that part. They also worked in the other end of Europe to let them into the Balkans. But all that's kept out of the media, even as they try to inflame hatred against their latest enemy, in this case, Russia. Just one more paragraph and we'll let it go for now. In 1395, Henry attained his majority and came to Seville to punish the insurrectionist. Martinez was put on trial, but there is no record of the verdict, an indication that the punishment was trivial, if in fact there was any punishment. When Martinez died, he bequeathed a considerable fortune to the Hospital of Santa Maria. In the meantime, nothing was done to punish the assaults, robberies, and murders perpetrated against the Jews. The municipal authorities, who looked the other way when the rioting was in full swing, blamed the rioters on the, quote, little people. And with that, we'll close. That's on page 138 in chapter 4. And next time, we'll keep going. It depends on how much I've read of this book. But what I wanted to talk about today was just how we're revising the forum in order to attract more from the good people we already have and more good people. And I encourage you to direct them our way. And I am now running the forum as a dictator, and anything I don't like is going to be hopped on. I am the Ferran Martinez of my bailiwick. And anyone who is helping the Jews in subverting the VNN forum will be dispensed with, that I might continue to incite the masses with the facts about Jews and with the analysis of the proper thing to do to solve the problems that they present. I think you have a pretty good idea of what I mean, since I spelled it out bluntly, as is the Aryan way in matters of urgency. So I want to thank you once again for being with me today on August... Is it the... Gosh, time goes by so quickly. On August 12th, Tuesday, August 12th, 2008. This is Radio Astina, number 20. I'm Alex Linder. And I will be back next Tuesday, and we have our regular archivist doing this so that it wasn't garbled when it came out. And I will also be, as events warrant, I will be recording myself and then just posting the MP3 so they won't be broadcast because it's garbled when I tape it myself. But that will be a way of supplementing what we're doing here as we do more radio. And if we have any of you out there in the audience who want to do your own radio, we have a setup for it, and we don't use our we're not using our full capacity. So if you are if you have something that people need to hear and you have any kind of a quality delivery, then let us know. So that'll conclude today's broadcast. Thanks for listening, and I'm going to play 2-3 songs, and then I'm going to shut the transmitters down. Bye.
Just one more day. Stay.
breathe.